What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. We grieve today in the Queen City, and we mourn the senseless murders of four law enforcement officers, and a lot of us hope to provide just, you know, some small bit of comfort to family and friends and colleagues whose, you know, world was shattered yesterday. And for the families and friends and a lot of those colleagues, the time is standing still for them. For now, it's like everything gets frozen. It doesn't seem real. So all we can do is hope that we can provide some comfort. Nothing we say is going to actually do that, I don't think. But being here and letting people know that there are so many people that are here that do support them, hopefully that makes some bit of a difference. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, along with the U.S. Marshals Office, the governor, the attorney general, the mayor, they were they just concluded their 11 a.m. Press conference. It ran just under an hour. As I mentioned yesterday, there is a lot of the details that we don't know for sure. We get early reports. Those early reports, those first reports, are often wrong. New details emerge that are in conflict with the original reports. That's why they do the investigations. And these are people that are doing these investigations under very difficult circumstances because these are their colleagues. And I remember watching an interview with an economist and a professor at Harvard. His name is Roland Fryer. He does a lot of work in the criminology field as an economist. And he said he did a ride along with police officers once. He, by the way, he's a black man, and he had grown up with certain perceptions about police. And he did a ride along. And he recalls going into this crime scene. There was, you know, there were murdered bodies in the on the floor, and the police officers responded, and they, you know, secured the scene. And after they were done and they're wrapping up and they're walking out of this building, I believe it was in, it may have been in New York or it was in Boston, I forget. And, you know, he's like, wow, this was a lot. You know, for him, he's just, you know, some professor guy. And he's like, this was a lot. He's like, you want to go, you know, grab a beer, decompress, whatever. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we still got 6 hours on the shift. And just like that, they're back at work. I was happy to hear the question and the answer that came from the Marshal Service, the director, who talked about, what's it called, CIRT, C-I-R-T, the Critical Incident Response Team, I think is what he called it. He said, it's okay to not be okay. All you have to do is ask. And, you know, for a lot of guys, that's very difficult, but it's also very necessary. Because this guy, Roland Fryer, sees this one scene, and he's like, you know, I need a minute. And a lot of these law enforcement officers, they don't get that luxury. It's a very difficult job. A very difficult job. Today's also the 5-year anniversary of the UNCC shooting. So feelings about that come back up. UNC Charlotte on campus shooting 5 years ago today. It was 17 years ago, almost to the day, that two officers were murdered about a mile and a half away from the scene where this occurred yesterday. officers Sean Clark and Jeff Shelton. And I'm reminded of those two officers almost on a monthly basis. I was a reporter at the time when that occurred and had to cover that story, attended their funerals. That was probably the toughest funeral I've ever been to or had to cover at the same time. But I'm reminded of them because I drive past the park that's named after one of them, Jeff Shelton, almost once a month. It's where my nephew plays soccer, right next to that field, right next to that park. Of course, before that, it was, what, 30 years, 31 years? October 5th, 1993, John Burnett and Andy Nobles, right, lost their lives in the line of duty. This is, by the way, the worst attack on law enforcement, most deadliest day, single incident for law enforcement since Dallas, Texas. Remember where the police officers were attacked. There are changes to the original reporting that that now open up a lot more questions. We got a lot of these differences. You know, I had all of this timeline that I was kind of constructing as to, you know, what we think occurred based on just the initial reports. But now after hearing this today, there are a lot of changes. For one, okay, there's no, just for to start off with, there is no indication of any friendly fire. But also, it doesn't seem like there were multiple shooters. They don't know that. It doesn't, they're not sure of that. I don't know how that squares then with the initial report of what occurred. The initial reports of what occurred was that the suspect that these law enforcement officers had, there was two from the state adult corrections office, one from the U.S. Marshal's office, and then one CMPD officer, but he was shot and killed after trying to rescue some of the downed officers. But on the initial approach, I guess, to the house to bring this guy in, Terry Clark Hughes Jr., 39 years old, lengthy criminal history. They were bringing him in on a fugitive warrant for possession of firearms by a convicted felon. This is what, by the way, enforcing gun laws looks like. For people who talk about taking guns and such, this is what this looks like. It's very dangerous situations. The initial story was that the suspect was out on the front lawn. And that's where he ended up after the firefight. What it sounded like today at the news conference was that the suspect was in the house when the task force arrived and had a higher position. He was on the second floor and he was shooting down onto law enforcement. There were two other people inside the home, both females, one 17 years old. Don't know the age of the second. They are still in custody, but we don't know if they're suspects at this time. We don't know what, you know, whether or not they were engaged in any of the shooting at the police officers. Don't know how the suspect ended up on the lawn. Don't know how that happened. They're still going through the body cam footage. They're still constructing, you know, the timeline. They are investigating how this felon was able to get the guns, one of which was they recovered from the scene an AR-15 that, when asked, Jennings said was automatic. And he was even asked to clarify whether he meant semi-automatic or fully automatic. And he said automatic. So I assume that means fully automatic. So how did this felon get that kind of a weapon? They're tracking that down. There was also a 40 caliber handgun. They say there are, at this time, no other suspects. 12 officers fired their weapons. They are all on administrative leave. That is standard operating procedure while the investigation continues. But the house is still being investigated, right? They've got a lot of evidence to collect from the house where this occurred. I will be talking in the next segment, not the next segment, but at 12:30 with retired Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith. She's a spokesperson for the National Police Association. So we'll touch base with her and ask her how people can help. If you'd like to, there are several GoFundMes that have been set up. I do have some of the audio from the news conference that I will be re-racking, and we'll play a lot of it, I think, probably starting in the second hour. There were comments from the governor and the attorney general and the mayor, and then the Q&A began, and some more information came out of that. So I think we'll kind of go through. I recorded it, so we'll pull up some of this stuff and bring that to you probably in the next hour. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I got to ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com, or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies, as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? We have now gotten the identity of the fourth victim yesterday. He was a deputy with the U.S. Marshal Service, Thomas Weeks. He was 48 years old. He had four children, his wife, Kelly. He was the last of the four that was yet to be identified, because we found out last night that the CMPD officer, Joshua Iyer, had succumbed to his injuries that he suffered while trying to rescue three of the downed officers at the scene, one of whom was Deputy Weeks. The other two are Sam Peloche and Alden Elliott. I apologize if I've mispronounced any of their names here. They were officers with the North Carolina Department of Adult Correction. They were both 14-year veterans. They were task force members or officers assigned to the U.S. Marshals Carolina Regional Fugitive Task Force. Sam Peloche joined the Department of Adult Corrections, or the DAC, the NCDAC, Special Operations and Intelligence Unit, back in 2013. Alden Elliott followed in 2016. According to the state, they served several years as probation and parole officers, that they loved their work. And Sam leaves behind a wife and two children. Alden and his wife were parents to one child. These officers, the state press release from Secretary Todd Ishii, said these officers died as heroes and made the ultimate sacrifice in their service to our state. We remember them. We honor their service. We send our deepest condolences to their families and friends, and we pray for healing for all affected by this tragic incident. I mentioned the Dallas shootings, the deadliest day for law enforcement in America until yesterday was Dallas. 2016, five officers killed in Texas after an armed sniper opened fire in downtown Dallas during a demonstration against police. Four Dallas officers and one transit officer were killed. The police ended up killing the gunman, remember, with an explosive sent by a remote-controlled robot. Yesterday was the deadliest day for law enforcement in America since then. I want to welcome to the program Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, retired. She's a spokesperson for the National Police Association. Welcome to the program, Sergeant Smith. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Certainly, certainly. Thank you for making some time for us today. We appreciate you. First, tell us, what is the National Police Association?
The National Police Association is a charity organization that helps support the American law enforcement officer and the people who support us. We provide grants. We have attorneys that get involved in cases. We're not a union. We're not a membership organization. But we help support cops and the people who appreciate us.
So the website for people who want more information about the organization, nationalpolice.org. You've got a lot of experience in all different facets of police work over the course of your, almost 30-year career in law enforcement?
Yes, I've actually been in law enforcement since I was 17 years old as a dispatcher, and then I was a cop for 29 years. I'm still an active police trainer and active in the profession, and of course we're just heartbroken over what y'all are experiencing locally here as we continue to talk about the war on cops.
Yeah. So what a lot of the, I don't want to say frustration, but it is a bit of frustration that civilians have, I think citizens have, is, you know, what do we do? What can we do to, you know, help law enforcement? Because it seems like, you know, if you don't know anybody who's in law enforcement personally or in your family or whatever, like, you know, people want to do something and they just kind of don't know what to do. So from that side of the badge, what do you as law enforcement appreciate and what do you look for and what would you have people do?
That's such a great question, especially in times like this. One of the best things you can do is just smile at a police officer, wave to him. If you see him in a coffee shop or parked writing a report, just, you know, say to them, thank you for what you do. And in this situation where we've had four of our colleagues senselessly murdered, just saying, I'm sorry for your loss, I feel your pain, we're with you, just makes such a difference in the lives of law enforcement officers. And then, you know, you can do things like go to nationalpolice.org. We have a thank you note program where you can get free thank you notes just to send a note of thanks to your local law enforcement officer, because it really is, you know, we're going on now 4 years of this vilification and demonization of the American law enforcement officer and this false narrative that somehow we are the problem. And just letting your local law enforcement know that you appreciate them just means the world to us.
So then, how do local law enforcement agencies, how do they help their officers, friends, colleagues, whatever? How do they help them process sort of the grief? Because a lot of them right back out on the beat right after this happens. They're back on the street doing patrols.
You're absolutely right. There are broken-hearted cops still processing a very bloody, horrific crime scene right now. And as we're coming up on National Police Week, where we're putting 200-plus names on the wall at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, what we need to do is recognize, and this goes to police leadership as well, we need to recognize that police officer mental health is a very real concern. You know, twice as many cops die by their own hand every year than they die from felonious assaults. It is very often difficult and heartbreaking for law enforcement officers to see the depravity of people, you know, in their communities day after day after day. I mean, we deal with every horrible thing you can think of, including the murder of our own colleagues. So police officer mental health and those services are so important. Things like peer support and counselors and therapy dogs, which is something the National Police Association has a real heart for. And so as a community member and as a law enforcement leader and a fellow cop, support those kinds of programs.
Is that a difficult thing to get buy-in from or participation from among law enforcement officers? There seems to be, and I see this just from the outside, there seems to be a mentality pervasive that like, oh, I'm, you know, just suck it up. I'm tough. I can get through this. And they don't ever ask for the help.
We were told when I was in the police academy, don't take this stuff home. Don't talk to anybody about it. Deal with it. And very often how you dealt with it was go to a bar and have a few beers, things like that, inappropriate ways of dealing with it. We were told just ignore your feelings. We're doing a much better job now of helping younger officers deal with this. But again, when it goes back to leadership, police leadership and political leadership, a lot of officers who come forward and tell their leadership, hey, look, I'm having some problems. I think I have post-traumatic stress. I think I'm having these kind of feelings. What very often happens if you don't have a good program in your agency is those officers are stripped of their firearms and their police powers, and they're sat at a desk somewhere. And that's just wholly inappropriate. We have got to admit, and we have to admit this ourselves, law enforcement officers, that it's okay to feel bad, sad, mad about what is happening, but then we have got to find good ways to deal with it. And that's why I'm such a big supporter of peer support, peer-on-peer counseling.
Right. There's a term, survivor's guilt. Right. And even if the law enforcement officer wasn't there at the moment that the tragedy occurred, I've read Charlotte that had two officers murdered like 30 years ago, Burnett and Nobles. And one of the posts on one of the obituary pages was from another cop who was carrying around this guilt because he couldn't get there in time.
And that is a very common situation. And you know, we have to be mindful of that in Charlotte right now. We have got to understand, because remember, we've got five other cops that didn't die but were injured in this situation. They're going to have, you know, the post-traumatic stress issues of dealing with that. And police officers who weren't on the scene that day, who had maybe called in sick or taken a day off or were just on the other side of the town or the county, that is a very, very real concern. And we have to be prepared for that, the law enforcement profession, to deal with it. And again, it goes to leadership. And we've got to stop in this country having political leaders and activists stand up and lie about the American law enforcement officer and call us racist and call us killers and things like that. We've got to remember the feelings that we have today, the feelings of love and sadness for this profession, and stop with this false narrative that the American law enforcement officer is bad.
I remember saying it's at one point that, you know, if you get lied to all the time by every single person you interact with, eventually you're going to start thinking everybody lies to you all the time. Everybody does. And for a law enforcement officer, if every time they pull somebody over, you know, they ask, do you know why I pulled you over? And they say no. And they know why, actually. Is there anything in the car? No. And every time they get lied to, I could see why they would think that everybody's kind of lying to them all the time. How difficult is that to guard against?
Well, as a police officer, you have to have a cynical nature. You have to be suspicious of people. That doesn't mean that you walk up to everyone and think that, you know, they're a bad person. But remember, cops get hurt and killed walking up to people on traffic stops or responding to 911 calls or responding to minor traffic crashes. Sometimes cops get hurt and killed sitting in their own patrol vehicle, just doing nothing more than filling out a police report. So there's something called hypervigilance biological roller coaster, because we have to be constantly aware and constantly suspicious of people just to stay alive. It can wreak havoc with us emotionally as well as physically.
Yeah. Yeah, living in that heightened state of alertness, the adrenaline rushes and crashes. It's not a job that everybody can do. Absolutely not. We appreciate you making some time for us today and for your service as well. Thank you, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. You can find more information about her organization that she's with. She's a spokesperson for the National Police Association. It's nationalpolice.org. And a reminder, Police Week is May 11th, starts May 11th. Policeweek.org is that website, too. Thank you, Sergeant Smith. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Take care. Thanks again to Sergeant Smith for joining us. And again, that website was nationalpolice.org. They have the thank you notes. I'm going to have to go check that out. I Did not know that. I was over on their website earlier. So I was not aware that they did that. And Police Week is coming up May 11th. And this is when they add, as Sergeant Smith was saying, they add names to the memorial. And I've been a donor to that memorial for, I don't know, 20 years or so. Well, probably 17 years, roughly, since officers Clark and Shelton were murdered. About a mile and a half away from where this tragedy occurred yesterday. It was on March 31st, 2007, when Shelton and Clark went to a domestic disturbance call. Didn't find anything, couldn't find anybody, nothing going on. And as they're walking away, this guy walks up behind them and just puts a gun to their heads and shoots them. And he was convicted to life sentences because the death penalty got taken off the table because the detective in the case threw away his notes and the judge said that that's enough of a reason then to, yeah. So please do a good investigation. Because I don't know. We don't know if there's another suspect, if there's somebody else that was involved in any of the shootings. And please, please, taking gunshot residue tests off of the hands of the two females that came out of that house. This was a question Brett Jensen asked today at the press conference.
You've been in chief with other officers that have died and also yes. Officers when others have died. How is this one different from maybe the other ones that you've had to deal with?
You know, probably the most difficult. All of them are difficult. You know, the last few days it's just been very tough. And knowing that you have families that are hurting right now, we'll get through it, though.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.